Here we go.
Jake and Josh are here to analyze the game they love for the team they love.
This is another Dolphins podcast.
Here's your host, Jake Mendel and Josh Houts.
Thanks for tuning into another Dolphins podcast. Our favorite football team, the only undefeated franchise in the NFL, have won back-to-back games for the first time this season. So today, I thought it'd be a good idea for us to spend some time looking at how the Dolphins are starting to stack win on top of win. Joining me and Josh is Dustin Godin. What's up, man? It's good to see you again.
Yeah, good to be back, guys. Definitely, you know, a better home game experience last week than, you know, the last two, I would say. So happy to be back in the win column. First win streak of the season. First 30 burger of the season. It was a great time.
Were you at the game?
Yeah.
Let's hear some story. You guys, any stories you want to tell us? How awesome was that being there for that butt kicking of the Raiders?
Oh, man, you know, it's kind of just, you know, one of those things. Me and my family, we go to all the games, and so we always start with a nice tailgate. We always do a theme, so we started out with like a Caribbean chicken and pork theme and some like beans and rice and stuff. And you know, me and my cousins always do our shotgun pregame right before the it's tradition. It helps us win. We're convinced. And yeah, so I mean, at the game, you know, there were some frustration moments, but overall, you know, it always felt like the Raiders were chasing us. So yeah, it was a good game.
The Dolphins are in a unique spot right now where, you mentioned it, they were in a spot where the Raiders were forced chasing them, but it's not with a lot of downfield action. These aren't the 2022, these aren't the 2023 Miami Dolphins. As much as we would love it to be, he's got Hill time and time again, we are seeing defenses adapt. We're seeing the Miami Dolphins forced to do different things. And we saw this offense look very uncomfortable early in the season, but that had nothing to do. Well, it had everything to do with the backup quarterback situation, but I think one of my favorite developments, especially in the last couple weeks, is just seeing this offense adjust. Tua Tagovailoa, since he's returned, Miami leads the league in EPA per dropback since week 8. Dustin, you mentioned that this was one of the better games it was to watch for as a Miami Dolphins fan, but since Tua returned, this offense has looked different. It's looked a little awkward at times, and even dating back all the way to the Cardinals game where the Miami Dolphins lost by 1 point, it hasn't looked bad, I'd say. It's looked different, a little awkward, but I wouldn't say bad.
No, I mean, at the end of the day, pre-Tua coming back from IR, we had like 11 points per game, right? Something like that, 11 and a half. We are now at like 27 and a half. So 16 point difference over since he's come back. Like while I am a person who does not believe in quarterback wins, I do believe that we can measure how much a quarterback is worth to a team, in especially in a situation like this where we go an extended period of time without them and then they come back and the numbers just immediately skyrocket. You're right. It does look different than it did in 2022, but a lot of that has to do with, you know, sort of the best way I can explain it is the 2023 Dolphins were so good at a particular thing that NFL defenses across the board implemented ways to stop that for all teams. Like, look at all the finesse offenses. They're all hurting this year. We have done a pretty decent job these last three or four games where we have started to shift our identity away from some of the things that we were doing in 2022. And I imagine as we go on and we continue to stick to this formula, there will come a time where we can get back to that as defenses start playing a bit, you know, a way to stop the underneath stuff.
Yeah, at some point we're going to get to the happy medium here, right? And it's just going to be hopefully this well-polished machine that just cannot be stopped. I mean, before the season, or, you know, again, if we were watching an opposing offense pick us apart in that same way, I might sit here and, you know, wrinkle my nose at it or something, but I have no gripes with how things are getting done, right? I think Mike McDaniel said that it was a point of emphasis this offseason to, you know, sustain some drives, and I don't know if he quite meant 14 plays, you know, 97 yards and things like that, but, you know, to get away from just the one trick, that big play, and that being live and die by that. So we're seeing it over the weeks. I am intrigued to see how this offense, again, the run game more particularly, comes involved when we get a healthy Alec Engel, because as we're seeing, you know, it's not the same without him out there. So don't care how it's done. This is an NFL streak. Just get it done. Death by a thousand paper cuts, whatever it takes. I like the way this offense is evolving, and I like the way Mike McDaniel's starting to, you know, show that he can change his mindset and when he needs to.
The Dolphins have scored on 60% of drives since Tua has returned to action, and that's pretty much where the Dolphins are going to have to stick at for the rest of the season, right? You go on 2-3-game losing streaks, there's not a lot of room for error, so you're going to need to be an offense that consistently marched down the field. And I was watching the game replay. You get a couple different options. You can watch the broadcast film. You can watch the All-22. I just did the condensed version because I was just kind of wanted to listen to Ross Tucker yell a little bit. I don't want to listen to Jay Feely, so now that I mentioned it, I don't know why I was listening to this. But I thought it was interesting that there was even like a point in time where there were back-to-back plays where Tua tried to force it to Julian Hill. I think it bounced off one hand on the right side of the field. It was on a 1st and 10. Second play, you go right back to him. It's the first down to move the sticks. I think something that's been really fun to watch about Tua specifically this year is him going back to being that blackjack dealer, right? That's, I think, one of the things we really liked about him coming out of college. It wasn't like we're just going to feed our number one wide receiver. This wasn't the 2016 Jaguars where it's Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns. We're not going to be super great. Just you guys go do something. Tua under pressure specifically. 5 of 6 with he was sacked twice. It's worth mentioning that. But 5 of 6, 101 yards and 2 touchdowns. He was absolutely dicing opponents up. And what I think is so interesting is I think early in Tua's career, and we said this kind of jokingly, Josh, quite a bit, is it seemed like once or twice a game, Tua was going to throw a ball at a linebacker's gut. It just was going to happen. He was going to make that bad read. It seems like he's gotten a lot more comfortable that if that first read, the 1.8 second decision isn't there, he looks really comfortable moving out of the pocket, escaping a little bit, and flat out not panicking where you're doing that, whether it's trying to throw it out of bounds and you let a defender get a pick six the other way. He just looks like someone who needed a couple weeks to get comfortable, get into the rhythm of what this offense is now asking for him, and now he's leading up or reaching that standard.
Yeah, and I mean, it goes back to perform, right? I mean, all offseason they were talking about how he's trying to, extend plays and do things like that, bring back some of that Bama Tua that we've seen. And I mean, these last few weeks, I mean, there are plays where you absolutely see him extending it and, rolling out to the left, hitting Tyreek Hill, hitting Jalen Waddle, whatever it is. So seeing Tua Tagovailoa evolve, I mean, I was a little bit of a pessimist, I think, saying how, our season's lost with him coming back. It is, I have hope again. And to see him and the way this offense is executing again without the big plays is awesome to see. So I love that he's being able to extend plays. I love how successful he's been on third down in those key moments. You know, it might not be the prettiest. It might not be a Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen, but it's pretty damn close. And, it's the best the Dolphin fans have had for a long ass time.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of, this last offseason. I think we got on a call here and we were talking about how last year, Tua's numbers against pressure and Tua's numbers against the longer time in pocket goes, the more the numbers would look bad. And I think a lot of that is stuff that they identified that they need to get back to as a team. But not only as a team, but because we had some structural issues on our roster that we needed to add additional underneath options, not only from a roster, but a playbook design. I believe Kurt Warner talked about it in the offseason. He said something along the lines of Tua didn't do a great job last year getting to a third read or a second read, but the playbook also didn't do a good job of giving him those options either. So I think we identified that as a team, and we have addressed that. And Tua is back to, playing, in my opinion, a bit more like he played under Flores. He has a little bit more willingness to extend a play instead of get rid of it super fast. I mean, he's still getting rid of it in that 2.3, second region. But, he's doing, there's a number of times now that you can see him sitting back there and really reading again. And that's something that we missed in 2022, I would say.
Tua was actually 7 of 8 when holding onto the ball longer than 2.4 seconds. One thing that I think is an issue and something, I mean, Tua deserves all the praise. 3 touchdown drives. That 97-yard drive was absolutely spectacular. Are we a little nervous about the fumbles at this point? Another game where the ball's on the ground. And you think about that first drive for the Dolphins where they did go down and score a touchdown. You're feeling really good. 2 things happened on that drive that really could have derailed the early momentum the Dolphins had. One, there was that penalty on third down where Raheem Mostert was tackled short. A really silly holding call gives the Dolphins a 1st down on 3rd and 20. And then on top of that, Tua put the ball on the ground. I think it was might have been Robert Jones or someone like that who landed on it. But this is another week, another time where I'm not saying Tua has to be absolutely perfect and he's never going to have a turnover, but man, every single week we can't have the ball on the ground to the point where the announcer is saying this has been an issue for him as the ball is leaving his hand.
What do you mean, Jake? He thinks he's pretty good at shortstop, and you know all the people eating chips should, you know, not comment on them. No, I kid. On that particular fumble, it's kind of difficult for me to really, like, I don't know, when watching it back, you can see that our offensive line just completely failed to pick up a stunt. Like, there was a penalty that should have been called as well. Robert Jones was being like held on his left by one guy pulling him by his left shoulder pad out of the B gap, you know, which left the stunt completely unblocked. So there's layers to it, right? Yes, I think Tua probably has to get to a point where he realizes the pressure is a little too close to him and he needs to not try to like throw it at that moment, because that's been leading. Like in the previous game, there was a moment where that fumble, I think he was getting ready to throw it to Jonnu, but as he was moving his arm back, that's when the hand came in. So he just has to be a bit more aware of that kind of stuff.
I was going to say, I mean, like you mentioned, Jake, he would do the thing early on in his career where he kind of just would not see a dropping linebacker, whatever it was. That kind of prepared us for this, right? We don't see that anymore, but we do have these boneheaded, you know, whether it's a mishandled snap, whether it's, again, him trying to extend the play, getting hit, the ball coming out, whatever it is. So you asked if this is an issue. I think it'll absolutely continue to be an issue because it has almost been throughout all of Tua Tagovailoa's career, but, you know, it's not like one of those things where, you know, we're not cutting him or anything like that. But yes, fumbling and ball control issues are absolutely a problem with Tua Tagovailoa dating back to his rookie season.
And you just do hope, you know, if you want to be a Homer fan, talk yourself into it. Hey, he's going to get more reps. Maybe he has that feel. I mean, I can't imagine how often it's happening where there's somebody half an inch behind him during practice in the summer, right? I don't know if you really have that same intensity of these game situations. Not trying to make excuses, but something I did think that was interesting. Dustin, what were your thoughts on Kendall Lamb's performance? He didn't allow a sack. You had Max Crosby over there who was trying to torment the game. First play of the game, he's batting the ball out of Devon Achane's hand. He had a 15-yard penalty on Liam Eichenberg. But overall, he was pretty silent.
Yeah, I would say Kendall Lamb is who we thought he is. He is a better pass protector than Austin Jackson is. But that comes at the expense of the run blocking. He's just not as athletic and can't get to the second level at the same degree. But he's a solid pass protector, and we did some things, you know, where Eichenberg also helped out against Crosby a bit. Mm-hmm. But you know, at the end of the day, it looked pretty good.
Yeah, one of my biggest, biggest issue for me, at least, coming on doing these rapid reactions is not getting a full, clear picture of everything. And I told you right after, Jake, I overlooked this, right? We didn't get to talk about it enough. Kendall Lamb absolutely balled out. I thought maybe this game could be won or lost with that Max Crosby matchup. And, you know, regardless of whether it was how the Dolphins game planned or, you know, how they slid Eichenberg over, like Dustin mentioned, some of the other ways they countered it, whatever it was, Kendall Lamb really stepped up. And it you know, allowed the Dolphins to extend those plays and have more time for Tua Tagovailoa, which ultimately led to that 34 points. So I was very impressed with Kendall Lamb, but honestly impressed with this entire offensive line who, again, a couple weeks ago I was posting pictures of Chris Greer, the offensive line worries you guys more than me. He might be right. I mean, as the season goes on, I mean, at least I've now, maybe he has a point. But whatever it is, the offensive line is playing pretty damn well.
Dustin, you know, in like Guitar Hero, you can reach like 10 points or 10 notes in a row. You get the times 2, another 10, you get the times 4. The multiplier just gets bigger and bigger the more consistent you are. Is that what's kind of happened for this Miami Dolphins offensive line? I think the most underrated story of the 2023 season is what? 14 different offensive line combinations. I have an entire chart. I don't think they went more than back-to-back games with the same 5, let alone your official starters. Mm-hmm. Austin Jackson, it's been announced he's done for the season, and I'm a little concerned about Kendall Lamb holding up. But are the Dolphins, I'm going to knock on every piece of wood, everything I can find, are the Dolphins at a point where they kind of have that times 4, maybe a times 8 multiplier, where these guys have just worked together for so long, where Liam Eichenberg's looking good, Robert Jones is looking good, just because you're not getting hurt every other week and forced to miss a month or forced to go on injured reserve and kind of break up that consistency you develop all summer long?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, any coach will tell you that the key to good offensive line play is good communication, and that can only happen once they gel. I think also there's probably some you know, thought around the way that they're paired together. It was kind of one of our concerns in the offseason about how, you know, our opinion, at least, of Brewer at the time was that he was going to be a fantastic run blocker, but we were concerned about the pass blocking. And that proved to be false. He's been fantastic in pass blocking. But the concern was that we were putting him next to Eichenberg, and we were putting Eichenberg next to Jackson, who's also, in my opinion at least, still a poor pass blocker. And so the concern was that middle over was going to be an issue pass blocking. Now with Lamb back in, I would say, I would say that he helps Eichenberg be better, because Eichenberg's deficiency is pass blocking, but his run blocking is better than his pass blocking. And so they complement each other pretty nicely and can communicate in a way, or they can bounce off each other a bit.
The Brewer thing is still, you know, I was a big guy that wanted Connor Williams. I think a lot of fans may have wanted him, but Aaron Brewer, him being able to come in here and, you know, them having the
retired. Did we mention that Connor Williams retired?
Yeah, well, no, we did. I don't think we have. That's wild. I mean, and to just have Aaron Brewer, I mean, the guy is a perfect fit and he's playing exceptionally well. So again, maybe I have egg on my face and it's not Chris Greer, but again, we'll temper expectations. We've got an entire season still to be played.
Something I've talked both sides of my mouth about is, what was the deal with Raheem Mostert? What is happening here? Why is he not involved with this offense? Is Jalen Wright just getting more involved and they're phasing Mostert out? Was it fumble related? Guys, after watching this game and stewing on a little bit, what do you think is happening with this running back depth chart? Because last game, you know, Mostert didn't get a carry, but he had two big third down conversions. I think one was like a 3rd and 20. This game, he actually had a carry on the first drive, and it was inside the red zone. After stewing on this, after doing some critical thinking, I think the biggest thing impacting Raheem Mostert's snap count over recent weeks, it's the lack of Alec Ingold. Raheem Mostert, I think, is their version of a quote-unquote bruising running back. And don't get me wrong, Raheem Mostert absolutely loves to lower his shoulder and power through people, especially when the other option is Devon Achane at 5'10", 5'11". So I kind of think that they haven't really had that power to get those shocking runs up, quote-unquote shocking runs up the middle, that kind of ignited 18 rushing touchdowns for Raheem Mostert last season. I think Alec Ingold's been a missing piece lately.
Yeah, well, you got to remember, too, a lot of those rushing touchdowns were like goal line style runs. We a lot of the longer runs that we had last year were Achane, more than they were Mostert. So to me, I think the big key is that, like, going into this offseason, I thought that Mostert and Achane were this grouped in the same style of running back. And then we had Wright and Jeff Wilson Jr. like in the other style of running back. And I thought that we would be Mostert heavy towards the beginning of the season and looking long term as Achane as the full time replacement. To me, Achane, and I've been a little bit of a critique of Achane's field vision, but this year he's really, you know, since Tua's come back, he had some field vision issues when Huntley was here. But the last like 6-7 weeks, he has really just been playing on fire. And I think, honestly, them being a similar style and us not having a ton of red zone opportunities, I think that's a big key in Mostert's usage. Plus, I think there's a bit of an accountability thing from McDaniel right now, where, you know, the fumbles, that probably plays a factor as well. Mm-hmm. And then finally, he had the hip injury in that Raiders game. And I think McDaniel probably was like, you know what, I'll use you sparingly from now, you know, for this game at least.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up that hip injury. And again, I mean, not again, but he's 32 years old, right? I mean, I'm 38. I know he's probably feeling some bruises. And like you mentioned, both of you, he's kind of in the doghouse, for lack of a better word. But the way Devon Achane's kind of stepped up, being that, you know, baby McCaffrey kind of player that's just been able to do all sorts of different things, it's been so impressive to watch.
Do you guys think they one more thing about Ingold, I agree with you, Dustin, completely about the goal line. I think they could kind of cheat, though, I'm under the impression that like first and 10 from the 10 yard line is like the hardest play in football. Well, obviously third down, but just you have no real estate to work in. So what I think Miami did so well is you get that second and 10. You could run with Mostert because you could still spread a run out wide with Hill, Waddle. And then you have Ingold as that fullback, as that blocker. So I always thought that was an interesting dynamic that Miami, I felt, has lacked recently, and they might have tried to get back to. But how do we see this kind of going out? I mean, the Dolphins still, the season's far from over. Here there's a lot of football to be played, and it's only going to get harder as it gets a lot colder. There's snow on the ground. How does this running back room shake out, do you guys feel?
Yeah, I still think that the team is using right, like for the vast majority of the time they're using him on inside zone type plays. I think they're using Achan has actually started running a lot more inside zone himself too, but there was a while where he was like almost 90% or something like that outside zones, specific runner or, you know, pass catcher. I think, you know, Wright's size and power ratio, I think he's going to, you know, when it gets to those colder months, we're going to have to lean on him a bit more, and we're going to have to probably lean a bit more on Mostert as well. He's not what I would consider a power back, but he kind of runs like one at times. So yeah, we'll probably have to, you know, keep this three-headed monster alive. And I think that plays a factor in keeping, you know, the old guy and Mostert, you know, a little bit fresher.
And I'm okay with him coming in late in games and making that critical third down play where he's going through someone. You both mentioned him. I kind of, you know, I don't want to say for a guy who's on the roster, but you kind of overlook him. Jeff Wilson, could he be a guy that you mentioned it getting colder? I mean, he's the perfect guy to just sit there and keep an emergency breaking case, you know, towards the end of the season to just pound the rock. So maybe it becomes more of a four-headed monster. But I do think it's going to be ultimately Devon Achane, Jalen Wright taking over as we see. And hopefully, you know, we see Raheem Mostert make those big plays when he's called upon.
Josh, I got one question for you about Mr. Jeff Wilson here. Did you know he led the Dolphins in rushing in week one? Do you know how many yards he had?
Oh, God. 13?
Actually, just double that. 26. You left the Dolphins with 26 rushing yards. So I kind of like the idea of Jeff Wilson in theory, but Jeff Wilson on the field, I don't know if I'm necessarily on board with anymore.
Maybe should be like, Chris Brooks.
Should be Chris Brooks. But I mean, either way, the veteran in the locker room, you traded the pick for him, yada, yada, yada. I get why Jeff Wilson's here. I think that makes a lot of sense. One of the biggest issues with this Miami Dolphins team in general is the lack of pass rush. But even with your top pass rusher's sideline, I think the Miami Dolphins have been a great job limiting mistakes, limiting opposing offenses. However, we saw some things unravel in the second half against the Raiders. A stout red zone defense wasn't looking so stout, and Dustin, a big reason for that. Do the Miami Dolphins stink at tackling opposing players? I'll just play it out like that.
In general, I wouldn't say it's like an epidemic level problem. Like, I don't think that we're having such a hard time tackling that, you know, we're outside of the standard deviation of what NFL teams do. There are particular guys on the team and that were on the team that are particularly culprit, you know, in some of those tackling issues. But I'll just go through some simple numbers here, right? Like, we've got 89 missed tackles so far in this season. We've got 10 games. So that's basically 9 missed tackles a game, which when I read that or did that math, I was like, that seems high. So I went through all of the teams. And essentially what I found out is that 8 to 8 missed tackles per game is like standard average. And where you can look at like the best teams, I believe is it Philly? Let me take a look at my notes here. No, Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh right now has the best tackling rate, you know, of all the teams, and there's six missed tackles. And then there's some teams that are like over 10 missed tackles per game. So it's like that's the range we're talking about here. So it's sitting closer to 9, you know, we're not sitting on the right side of that average, but it's also not in that like 10.5 missed tackles per game, you know, level. We need to get better at it. And I think we are getting better at it. particularly with the cutting of David Long Jr. Dude was solely responsible for 14 of those missed tackles and like six games. He was averaging like over two missed tackles per game. And we brought in Dotson, and we started playing Walker. Both of those guys are doing well in tackling. You know, we've got Walker himself. He's played in seven games for us. He's done 324 snaps, but he's only missed three tackles. That's like less than half a tackle per game, and that's like 7% of his opportunities is what he's missed on the tackle. That's like 111th out of 151, you know, like 111th worst. So meaning that's a low number. But like Long Jr., he had the 11th highest rate of these linebackers. So like we drop in replacement upgraded, and then Dodson is also, you know, around that 7% percentage. So he's also not missing a ton of tackles. And Brooks is fantastic. He's at 8% as well. So we've really upgraded a lot there. I think the biggest concerns for me is how our interior defensive line, as much as I love Sealer and Campbell, they've been missing a bunch of tackles that, you know, I was kind of surprised to see.
And that might be where we are missing a Christian Wilkins and things like that. I thought it was fascinating you broke things down like that. And Pittsburgh with Deshaun Elliott and Minka Fitzpatrick, you know, being so high on the list. I think we're starting to see progression. I wondered how much of this, and maybe this is just the old head in me, you know, back in our day, they used to hit a lot more in practice. They used to do things like that. How much of it is just the NFL changing and, you know, doing less of those padded practices and things like that don't have these guys game ready at times. But at the same time, I've seen it with my own eyes, and Javon Holland's a culprit earlier in the year. Like, you know, sometimes these guys make business decisions, if we're being completely honest, and you just see them, you know, maybe step back from a pile, do things like that, that lead to these missed tackles in these big plays. So we're starting to see it progress, but I wondered how much of that, you know, is Deshaun Elliott saying his team's soft, and how much can they get better at that throughout the year? Because that will be, you know, ultimately what rights this season or what wrongs it.
Is that called doing a Brent Grimes? If you're just going to kind of like slide to the side when let a receiver run right by you. Something that I thought was really interesting about Sunday's performance, and you can kind of see some trends here. So over the last four games, the Dolphins have four or eight or more missed tackles in three of the four of them. And Sunday against the Raiders, I thought it was interesting. Kader Kohu led the team with three missed tackles. The other guys with missed tackles, Cam Smith, Storm Duck, Javon Holland, Jalen Ramsey, and Jordan Poyer. Is there any theme here that, or it was the idea that these are all defensive backs? Does that mean anything? Is this a warning sign for this Dolphins defense about things to come? You know, obviously you have Brock Bowers, who's going to be a bowling ball through opponents. And just look at what happened in the Bills game. The Dolphins had nine missed tackles. Jordan Brooks, two. Kamara, one. Peely, one. Tyus Bowser, one. You have some defensive tackles. You have some linemen in there where you just go, that was Josh Allen. But when you have Brock Bowers and then, Amir Abdullah, I think that's who it was who scored the touchdown against the Dolphins. When you have a third string running back on a team that's truly struggling to run the football, being a playmaker, is this a warning sign that the secondary might need to kind of boost things up or maybe do something a little bit differently moving forward?
I'm glad you actually brought up Kohu and Ramsey, because Ramsey was one of the guys that I was a bit surprised to see how much, you know, he's been like where he's been at with his tackling this season. Kohu, I don't remember him, you know, in previous years having tackling issues, but he certainly has this year. I mean, he has the sixth highest missed tackle rate among cornerbacks out of 116 that, you know, qualify. It's pretty insane. I mean, nine missed tackles in eight games. That's not very good for your nickel back. You need that guy to play dual roles. You know, so that's pretty confusing. And the other shocker for me was that Poyer actually, like, don't get me wrong, he's not playing well for us, but his tackling has been one of the better spots in our defensive backfield. I mean, he's still missed five, but that's five out of the nine games, and it's a 8.9% compared to Holland's 14.3%. Like, yeah, like, it's insane. Yeah, one thing I have kind of noticed is I kind of wonder a little bit, are they being coached to avoid you know, going too low for penalties or going high, because I'm kind of noticing them. They kind of wrap up around the thigh hip area, but then the guy, as the offensive player, you know, keeps running forward, they'll just like slide down the legs and then like latch onto the ankles. And I keep seeing that technique over and over again. So I kind of wonder, is there something going on with the coaching there? Are they being coached to tackle that way?
That's fascinating. I'm really glad you guys broke down this thing. I was going to say, sometimes they're probably just overly aggressive, right? Because I know Kader Kohu, when the last few years, I mean, in the nickel, there were times when he was blowing, you know, receivers up, making tackles in the backfield. And again, he's still playing good, but again, when you have a nickel like that, you want him to be able to make those stops and not be a vulnerability in the pass game or run game. So I think everybody needs to get better. Interesting nugget there with Jordan Poyer, because I've been the first to call him a Trojan horse. So some flowers for being able to tackle.
And that's kind of the concern with Kader Kohu, right? The idea with a slot cornerback, and please either you guys jump on me the second. The idea with the slot cornerback is you might give up a few yards, especially to a shifty slot receiver, but you won't let him go. You won't let him turn the 7-yard reception into a 23-yard reception. And if you're a slot cornerback, the guy you expect just to make that tackle and stay in front of the sticks, if he's struggling there, there also somewhere he was just lowering his shoulder. He dealt with an injury earlier this season. I don't want to get too deep, especially not talking to him, but you wonder if that's something he's trying to protect himself. Who knows? But yeah, it's been a little surprising. Kader Kohu's never been great against the run. He's been washed out, especially. I mean, you can't really blame it when you got offensive linemen barreling downfield at him. But in terms of just generally tackling, it's never seemed like an issue until this year. Overall, are there any other players you'd like to see inserted into the lineup based just on these tackling issues? Would you want to see maybe Storm Duck get a little more time over someone like Kader Kohu when everyone's healthy? Does anybody else deserve a little more chances just to be someone to keep it safe? I think that's a big thing for this Dolphins defense. You don't need to win every play for a 3-yard loss. Holding everyone to a field goal every single drive with this offense is more than enough to do the trick.
Yeah, I think for me, Cam Smith has done a pretty good job, you know, against the run. And he's been pretty bad in coverage at times. So I don't really feel comfortable putting him really out at the perimeter yet. At least, you know, and that's kind of a concern that Storm Duck, as a rookie undrafted, can come in and kind of be a better coverage cornerback than he is. But he can be, I think, a guy that we identify as, you know, someone that can come in on obvious rundowns. Additionally, in that same vein, I would say we probably need to be playing Hand a little bit more. Deshaun Hand has been playing fantastic as far as tackling goes. I mean, he has roughly the same amount of snaps as both Sealer and Campbell, because they're pretty rotational in that unit. And he's only missed one tackle compared to Sealer's 6 and Campbell's 5. He's like the 5th best tackler on defensive interior linemen, just on percentage of missed tackles alone. And meanwhile, Sealer, I love Sealer. He needs to be on the field a lot, but he's dealing with something where his tackling just isn't quite right, and he's missed 18.8% of his tackles. So it's like, it's kind of a little bit of a concern. So on rundowns, I think we really need to probably play Hand and even Benito Jones a bit more as well.
I like that you brought up Hand. That's what I was going to mention, because I thought, again, last week he played very well. I just don't think Calais Campbell or Zach Sealer are going to be coming off field too often, but having him as that rotational piece, it's definitely a gem and a nice piece that can, you know, help in the run game.
I wanted to tip my hat before we wrap up here on another Dolphins podcast. Jason Sanders, he's really starting to hit his stride. I know that's not a huge deal, but when you consider a bunch of 3-point games, a bunch of one possession games, having a kicker that's 82.6% on the year, including 6 of 8 from 50-plus, is a nice bonus. His long of 56 this season is something he's only done 3 times throughout his career. So, Dustin, are you still feeling a little queasy when you have Jason Sanders go up there for a kick, or is that confidence slowly coming back?
I mean, at this point, if you're telling me Sanders is kicking like a 52-yarder, I'm feeling probably better than if he's kicking like a 41-yarder. He's got this thing with the shorter ones that he has a higher chance of missing at least in my memory. I don't know if the numbers back that up. Special teams is kind of a sore spot for me in general, just because of it's probably our Achilles heel for their entire team right now. Whether that starts at Jake Bailey or Danny Crossman, I'm not real sure, but.
Should have kept Thomas Morstead, if that's what you were getting at there. But Jason Sanders, I mean, I'm going to be honest. I it's a roller coaster ride for me. Every few weeks, or I'm on here with the money sign without it. I do feel confident, though, when he's out there. I mean, I feel like, again, he hasn't really given us a reason to not be confident in him at this point. Although, that's the Dory brain, because if you think back to, like, what, two seasons, there's probably some misses in there. So, I like the Jason Sanders. Danny Crossman, we can just, you know, yeet him into the – we all wanted him gone at one point, and – Bailey, again, I think Morstead would have been the guy there. Do you guys see anything in the return game? Like, I'm waiting for someone to break one open. Like, are we ever going to see another kickoff return for the Dolphins?
Yeah, it's kind of been – good point, Josh. That was kind of one of the things. Like, the Miami Dolphins are going to be one of the teams that are front and center with the kickoff return just because they have the speed and they can take advantage of it. We haven't seen that at all. I mean, it seems like the Dolphins are still figuring things out. Raheem Mostert was returning kicks last game. I don't know if he was back there Sunday. I know Malik Washington was, which was, I believe, once. New.
Mostert was back there at least once. I remember looking down, being like, because I was like, Mostert's in at special teams right now.
Because he did it 2 weeks ago, and I thought that was kind of the slap on the wrist for the fumbles. Like, all right, go back there and return some kicks. Kind of seemed to make sense. But yeah, Josh, that's a great point. In general, the special teams unit is really been a disappointment. PFF, I think they're 32nd. But, I mean, spin zone, it was nice on Sunday because the Dolphins didn't have to punt. You're scoring every drive. You don't have to see Jake Bailey. That's a nice way to work around it.
Someone on Blue Sky was like, what's this defense doing? The Raiders haven't had to punt all game. And I was like, they've punted at least once, because I remember watching the hang time being like, Jake Bailey could never.
And the punter got to kick Calais Campbell in the head. Calais Campbell, excuse me.
That was brutal.
The odds on that play, man, have to be unreal. But, Dustin, before we wrap up here, I wanted to get your thoughts on where the Dolphins stand and how you think they're going to go moving forward. Obviously, we can't shake the Magic 8 ball and look too far down the road, but I'll just ask you this. Are we going to have something interesting to watch Thanksgiving night?
So Thanksgiving against Green Bay, that's going to be – I mean, that's a pivotal game for us. I mean, it's not quite as strong of a game for our you know, playoff prospects as this coming game and also the Jets game. And the reason for that is actually this coming game is slightly less important than it was before Sunday. But essentially, the teams that were competing with the final wild card spot, they all have not had their bye week yet. Mm-hmm. And so Indianapolis and Denver both have their bye week the week that we play the Jets. So we already are technically 1.5 game. If we can win that week, we close the gap by one game, essentially. And so at that point, it just becomes win what they win plus one. And so, you know, we have to go into each week looking at Indianapolis and looking at Denver. And we're already ahead of Cincinnati now. But if we win this week against Patriots, because Cincinnati has their bye week this week, we will have a 2-game lead on Cincinnati. So it is actually really important to, you know, just to give us that extra little cushion to win this week. Going into Green Bay, you know, they're a good team. It's going to be tough. The coaches know each other. You know, we had some good success against the Rams there. But you know what familiarity does. It makes it hard to predict stuff, but it makes an entertaining game, I think.
So we're going to be in the hunt, right? That's basically what you're saying. We're going to be in the hunt. We're going to beat up on Drake May this weekend and then just be on the hunt. And hopefully. Yes. Hopefully this thing doesn't end the way we all already saw it end many times before.
There are people kind of hinting like the Dolphins could probably lose 2 games and still make it. I'm in the camp. You can lose one more game. There's no other room for error than that. You have, I think room for one more mistake, whether it's the Packers. Houston, I think, is a beatable team. That's probably some famous last words. Or San Francisco, who also looks a little desperate. I think you got to win 2 of those 3. I think that'll probably solve the season.
Yeah, for me, I'm a little bit less strict about what I'm predicting. Like, of course, own your destiny, win out, and don't rely on anything else, right? Like, of course, all of that. But from a mathematical standpoint, I'm just looking at it and I'm saying, okay, win the next three games, or at least two of the next three, we could be fairly tied with where, you know, for that spot. And then at that point, you know, it's just a matter of keeping pace plus one. And whether, you know, Denver and Indianapolis, they happen to go 5-0, or they have how many? They have 6 games left. They happen to go 3-3. Well, then we got to go 4-5, you know, or no, we have to go 5. So that's probably best case scenario, you know, is that we need probably at least 5, but like just win out. Don't leave it up to chance, but still keep in mind what you need.
Adversity is opportunity. Wish it was colder, all that stuff. They got what they wanted, right? This is, they got to do it.
If they win out, they're probably in the hunt for like the, probably still the 6th seed, right? They could probably squeeze up if they went out. I mean, with this kind of crazy talk still at this point, right, though? I mean, I don't think they're destined for the 7th if they play that well.
Well, that would make them 11-6, right?
Yeah. I don't think you'd be a 7 seed at 11. That sounds – it's so hard because there's going to be so much teams beating up on each other too, which will make things a little more clear. But right. I have a hard time seeing an 11-6 team being a 7 seed.
It's tough because 6 will be definitely one of Baltimore or Pittsburgh, right? Like, it's just going to be one of those teams. They're both
– could have – is the secret sauce out after they lost, scoring only 12 points?
I mean, Pittsburgh's defense is legit, so I don't know. Maybe – You never know, because we've seen a strong defensive performance really wreak havoc on a team multiple weeks until they fix whatever they needed to fix. But it's Baltimore and it's Lamar Jackson, man. I don't ever doubt that guy.
Great point.
All right, that is it. That is all the time we have today on another Dolphins podcast. Dustin, it's always fun to talk with you. Thank you so much for joining us. If you guys are liking what you're listening to, I encourage you to please hit that subscribe button. And if you have a moment of free time, please, please, please leave a review, leave a comment. That stuff helps others find the show. And today's clip was brought to you by the YouTube comments on the 560 WQAM YouTube channel. Yell at us. Let us hear your thoughts. We want to talk about the Dolphins. You can do it with us there. Thank you all so much for listening to another Dolphins podcast. We will be back soon to preview this weekend's game against the New England Patriots. But until then,
it's up.
It's up.